Hey, farmers and landowners, this is Damian Mason coming at you with a question. Have you ever had disease or pest problems cost you money by reducing your yield? Well, of course you have. We fight this, right? That's what production agriculture is all about, is working as best we can to put out a great yield. And to do so, oftentimes, you've got to overcome disease and pests. The problem is we usually treat those diseases and pests after the problem, right? So what if you could do it proactively? What if you had a tool that gave you predictive analytics so that you would know if you have things like corn rootworm, soybean cyst nematode, sudden death syndrome? Well, you have that tool now. It's from Pattern Ag. Pattern Ag, doing predictive soil analytics way beyond just the old days of sticking a probe in the ground every few acres and saying, hey, wow, we got some nitrogen deficiency here. They'll let you know if you have pests and disease. Go to pattern.ag. That's www.pattern.ag to learn more about this awesome technology and how it can help you increase your yields by taking care of diseases and pests before they cause you harm. Well, greetings and welcome to another fantastic episode of the Business of Agriculture podcast. It's me, your host, Damian Mason. I've got a great show for you today. We're talking about business. We're talking about a unique business. Well, it's not completely unique because unique means there's no comparison. Well, there's no such thing, let's face it, as that. But we're talking about the dairy and feed additives business. And we're getting some perspective from an international company because my guest is Lasse Jacobson. He's the VP of Business Development for the United States of America for a company called Protecta. Protecta is a company he has part ownership in with his family. They also have involvement across the pond in Europe. So you're going to hear today about business from the perspective of a young guy that's the VP for this company that's also new to the United States. He's actually from Canada and his family hails from Denmark. We're going to get perspective on Europe. We're going to talk about working in a niche industry, frankly, and also selling to a shrinking consumer base, meaning dairy farms are not going to be more prevalent in the future. They're going to be less prevalent. There's going to be less people that are customers. We've got all these different perspectives. We're hearing that from Lasse. Thanks for being here, buddy.
Yeah. Thank you, Damian. Good to be here.
All right. Real quickly, give me the scoop. What's Protecta?
Yeah. So to touch a little bit on the background of what you said there of where I came from, then the name Protecta stems back from my grandfather, actually, and he was involved quite a bit in pig production in Denmark. He kind of fought the whole genetics industry and was fed up with the Danish crown of not wanting to bring new genetics into Denmark back in the 70s. So he was involved with that, but then a couple other businesses as well too. One of the main things that him and business partner was from Sweden came up with was the concept, at least throughout Denmark, of farrowing crates, believe it or not, which now are being removed again. But the whole idea was obviously to protect the piglets, and then therefore the name came out, Protecta Barns, Protecta Systems, and that's where Protecta came from. So bring that onward to today. They still operate those farms in Denmark, but my father took that name and incorporated a new company in Canada when he took our family there in 2003 and started representing European agriculture companies in Canada. And,
okay, so let's
took the Protecta name with them.
Let's do a few things. If you happen to be listening, dear listener, we appreciate that. If you happen to be viewing, it's pretty obvious to you. Lasse is a younger guy. He's under 30 years old. How old are you? 28?
27, yeah.
27 years old. And so you were born in Denmark and came over here as an infant and to Canada. Is that the idea?
Eight.
You were eight years old. Right. Yeah. You were 8 years old when you came over here. And then you now live in Southern California and you have USA responsibility. We should also give a little background because a lot of people are really good at what they do and they're out driving around Nebraska right now selling seed, let's say, and they're listening to this. Denmark, mm-hmm. where your family hails from, one of the four Scandinavian countries, the only Scandinavian country that has a connection to mainland continental Europe. Mm-hmm. And the more important thing is huge hog producing country. It's a small country, frankly, compared to like the United States, a bunch of hogs. So your family's foray into agricultural entrepreneurialism for your grandfather was going into hogs, which is kind of the main agriculture in Denmark. Am I right?
Correct.
Farrowing pens redesigned. And that's the idea of protect the pigs, Protecta.
Yeah. That's where they took the name Protecta from. Yeah. They were just having too many dead losses when after the pigs were farrowing, right? And they wanted to separate the sow from the piglets so that she didn't roll over on them, yep. Especially during those early days. And that's the whole concept. I mean, I'm sure it was being done other places as well too, but it hadn't been broadly introduced in Denmark. And they set up the manufacturing and the systems, and they built barns throughout all of Denmark, throughout all of Europe. And, you know, specifically specialized in the design of those crates as well, too, to protect the piglets. So
your dad comes to Canada, brings his family over, brings his little kid, you, an 8-year-old kid, to Canada, and then sets up shop. And the main business then was doing what? Selling stuff that was made in Europe to North American agricultural production?
Yeah. So there was actually a farm, which is why we ended up so rural Ontario, right? Because you probably recall it was Lucknow, Ontario, which is a town of 1,300 people, which is in what I like, what you would essentially call the middle of nowhere. It's like 2.5 hours northwest of Toronto, mm-hmm. up towards Lake Huron. And that happened to be where he had a genetic, like essentially like a feeder farm. My grandpa did, right? So my dad had been involved with that earlier in his, you know, younger 20s, had been over visiting it. And when he came over then in 2003, this barn is now coming up on, you know, early 20 years old, right? And is either needing to be rebuilt or torn down. So when he came over, they actually were thinking about rebuilding and continuing this out, you know, the pig production as well too, portion of it. But many companies started reaching out to him. He was representing a few already, and several more reached out, and he just decided, you know, I've always been more in tune with the business side, you know, the import export side. Let's just tear down the barn and not rebuild, and focus on building an import and distribution company. So
you go from production to distribution / sales agent for these manufacturers, but now you act as manufacturer, right? The evolution is you were selling the stuff, and now your company acts as manufacturer, or is a manufacturer, but does so with contractual arrangements in Europe. Yeah.
Correct. Yeah. We've actually ended up, we were partnered with one of our primary manufacturers. So they have some ownership in our company as well too. Right. And we work very closely with them as we also look to what does the future of manufacturing look like in the US as volumes become relevant for that. So, yeah.
So let's talk about what the product mix looks like now. The product mix, I go to your website, it looks to me like a feed additives company, which is a long way away from farrowing crates. So take me through that evolution and talk about now what the product mix is and who the customers are.
For sure. Yeah. So one of the products that you represented to begin with, which we still do to this day, is Stallus NF, which is a dry disinfectant that can be used in the presence of animals. It has an EPA registration that it classifies it as a disinfectant, but at the same time, it's allowed to be used in the presence of animals. It has the toxicology test for that. So it's
disinfects. So we're disinfecting for disease. We're disinfecting for what?
Yeah. Yeah. Any sort of it controls the environment by producing a minor, a slightly acidic environment. It has like a pH of 3, 3.5. So not harsh enough to be, you know, acidic to the skin to where it's damaging, but just enough to kind of work in a nice balance with the natural sebum of the skin, right? Which is like a pH of 5. So so it's used to just disease control throughout. If you have an outbreak in, used a lot within pig barns. If there's an outbreak of anything within one room, the room can be dusted, for example, or it can be spread frivolously throughout the room to kind of prevent spread between rooms. Yep.
This product is a dry disinfectant. You go in and sprinkle around or spray or some application method. I don't know, fogging it. Gets applied somehow in there.
You can fog it with a leaf blower 3-in-1. Yeah.
Where
you suck it up and dust the room. Yeah. You put your, you measure out the volume of the room and you kind of put it in a couple buckets throughout the room and you essentially just fog the room. And after 10 minutes, it completely settles down and touches every surface. Yeah. Yeah.
Answer me this. Did you start off with telling me about Stallusan because that's where the bulk of your sales are? Is that the main product that you guys sell?
Yeah. So today it's not, but that's what started. That was a big portion of the company. It still is. But that would lead us into why we ended up coming into being a feed ingredients company primarily as we are today. So in 2008, 2009, that company that we were representing back then, or my dad was, Stallusan, was purchased by Vilifos DLG, who is today our partner, right? So, and at that same time, they had just introduced a new product, which was called Exalit, which was this feed ingredient for dairy cows for preventing hypocalcemia, still quite novel to them. They'd purchased the rights off the professor to the
non-dairy kids in the room. Yeah. Hypocalcemia is
It's milk fever, so low blood calcium. Yeah, low blood calcium.
Which is interesting. The person that doesn't do dairy doesn't know that milk fever is a big thing we talk about all the time and dairy cows. And then you're like, what? They have low calcium. I thought they were all about calcium. Well, we take it out of them. So, yes.
Yeah, because of the genetically high milk demand at calving, it just puts too much stress on. They can't balance their calcium on their own most of the time. So we have to intervene to help. So they bought that, and the company that we were representing, and then we got associated with them because of that, because now all of a sudden we were buying this product through them. Yep. And then it happened to be that this product was introduced at the same time. And my dad saw a lot of opportunity in it and went out and ran with it in Canada. And, you know, coming from a pig background, he was running around visiting dairy farms. It was still similar enough, but quite a bit different. And it turned out to be a really, really good product.
All right, so we got a milk fever feed additive that is it feed additive, or is it specific to you treat cows just that have the propensity to have milk fever?
No, it's a preventative, so it's a feed additive. Yeah,
so we put it in the ration for all cows, or at least all cows that are freshening. Is that the idea?
Correct. Yes, close up freshening cows. Yes.
Okay. And on dairy farms that the average person that's listening to this, that's not a dairy farm person, the large dairy facilities have them separated basically by when their interval of calving is. So you could feed this to one of your seven barns where the cows are close up or fresh, is what you're saying?
Yeah. So they'll normally try to separate them around 21 days before expected calving, right? And during that time, this would be added to the diet.
You put them in the ration. So the split of business now, you came from a hog background, then you're distributing stuff. Now you act as manufacturer, you partner with Vilafos, you're manufacturing. What's your business look like in North America right now? Mostly dairy, mostly swine, some poultry, split evenly. What's it look like?
Yeah, I'd say we're probably 80% dairy. And then the remainder split. Maybe 75% dairy and the remaining 25% split between hogs and poultry. Yeah.
Oh, so give me again 75% dairy and then then the remaining quarter is between poultry and pork. Okay. Mm-hmm. You've got this unique situation that you decided to come and set up shop in California. At once you talked about moving to Chicago. I'm glad you didn't do that. You're probably happier. So you are the outreach, and like your dad and you say, hey, if we're going to grow, we're going to go to the United States. I've had this discussion before on the Business of Agriculture podcast with an Israeli company that said, you know what? We don't really come to the United States. We're all over other parts of the world with our technology. We think it's a crowded marketplace. Ag is so prevalent there. It's a big agricultural country. And also there's a lot of people that want to sell their goods there. And so I've talked to international companies that said, we're going to stay away from the United States. It's too crowded of a marketplace. You didn't think that. You said, we're up here in Ontario. Let's go down south of the border and sell our stuff there. What was the logic? What was the business thought there? Clearly more agriculture here, shitloads more dairy cows here than in Canada. Was that the only reason? What's going on?
Yeah, it definitely played a part, but we just started getting interest from the US. And then I would say over the, you know, from 2016 to 2018, we started building a pretty significant export business from Canada. We obviously the success replicated in the US. And then to your point, I mean, you have much larger farms. And for us, it was easier in some ways because some of these larger dairies, you know, they were really, like you said, separating their close-up groups, right? So doing the separation compared to, you know, we also have large farms in Canada, but a large farm would be considered 300 to 500 cows, right? So, it almost made it a little bit more structured in that sense. We would go into some of these dairies if they were having problems with hypocalcemia. It was a big problem because there's a lot more cows, and our product just really solved it. So it just came to be over those years, and then in 2019, that's when we decided to, hey, like this export business is all of a sudden going to outgrow our Canadian business. We need to just incorporate and be US focused, you know, and do it from a US base rather than run this through a Canadian company. So,
okay. So you're the US base, you decided California, and you don't manufacture anything in the United States. You don't even manufacture it in Canada, right? It comes over across the pond.
Correct. Still. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. We got a bunch of questions. We're going to get back to the customer base. We're going to do all that stuff. Before we get into all those questions, I want to remind you, if you're a listener, about information. Rob Syke is, like Lhasa, a Canadian entrepreneur. Rob Syke and I are buddies. He has been like the founder of 18 different companies. Well, the one he started a couple of years ago, I want to tell you about. It's called AgVisor Pro. AgVisor Pro is an app you put on your phone. Everybody has their smartphone. You got yours right here. Grab your smartphone, punch in your app store, AgVisor Pro. 19% of farmers' time is spent securing and looking for answers to problems they have, looking for information. Why don't you shorten time and distance by using AgVisor Pro? It's as easy as just putting it on your phone. If you're an expert, let's say you know something, like Lhasa right here knows all about feed additives for milk fever. He could put his profile on AgVisor Pro and say, if you need to know about feed additives for AgVisor or for milk fever, look me up. And he could even charge for his expertise. That's the beauty of AgVisor Pro. You can get information for free. You can provide information for free. It's a hell of a lot more effective than Ag Twitter. Nobody's ridiculing you and telling you you're stupid on the public forum that is going to then make you think that you're stupid. Use AgVisor Pro to get information and answers to questions you have. Check it out. Put it on your phone. It's as easy as that. AgVisor Pro. Lhasa, we got all kinds of disruptions. You're a little bit vulnerable when all of your crap is manufactured in another country, when all of a sudden economics were good, situation was good, growth, protect is growing, you're clicking right along, and all of a sudden they lock down economies, they lock down borders. You can't move stuff. Total distortions of the marketplace. Couldn't get container ships, couldn't get containers. What the heck happened when you got into the COVID stretch of business?
Yeah, it definitely, it was a mess.
The cows still need milk. The hogs still need fed. There's still disease pressure on these hog facilities. They still need disinfectant. And yours is sitting on a dock over in Europe. Help me out. What do you do? What did you do?
Yeah, we were fortunate enough to also, like, we have local warehousing. So we do drop ship to a lot of our customers. Like, we'll send directly from our manufacturing unit in Denmark and in Germany right to the customer. So the container, we don't touch it, goes right in between to be as efficient as possible, right? So that changed a lot. We move around 300 to 400 containers a year over the water. So what we were able to do is get ahead of it enough that we built up extra inventory as everyone else was doing. And then we did have some scenarios where just good long-term relationships with customers where we would trade some product in between customers that we'd already sold to who had extra inventory. We had to do that's
an answer for like a week. That's an answer for like, hey, we've got 40 days worth of supply. We'll go ahead and give you 10 days worth of our stuff. That don't get you through a year and a half.
No. So that was the major crunch point. But then at the same time, we loaded up inventories, right? So we probably tripled our inventory. We ate costs on freight. There was obviously a massive increase in the European container freight, and we did not pass a lot of that on. We did some.
All right. Yeah. So that gets you for a couple of days. It buys you some time. Then you said you ate some cost. Did you for a month or two sell product at break even or even below break even just to keep things going because of the freight issue?
Yeah. Yeah. We were, you know, I'd say we ate probably like 60%, 60-70% margin there in a short period of time, right? We made some adjustments as we could. We got the inventory under control. I mean, the focus was just keep getting product to customers, which, I mean, that's what everyone was dealing with, right? So that's all we thought about, you know, whatever it takes, which that's what the shipping companies took advantage of. But during that time, we were able to go negotiate, like to commit to some like larger volumes consistently over the year. We locked in some rates coming into to 20 all throughout like 2022 as well here too, that we've been on. We were able to get, like I said, we switched. Like today we do not send directly to customers as much as we did prior to COVID, and that there's no doubt that changed that. We now bring everything much more streamlined into three different warehouses throughout the US. Mm-hmm. and we distribute through there. There's a couple customers where they take very large volumes where we'll still work with them direct just to get that extra cost benefit. But we're able to be pretty competitive by having a more, we can get better rates, right? When we bring hundreds of containers into one location.
Right.
And we can agree those with the steamship lines compared to going many different places. So
I don't think they're steamships. Yeah. I don't think they run on steam anymore, but
that's, yeah, I think that's just the term they use for them. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. So answer me this, because the people that listen to this are business people. They might be farmers. They might work in industry, whatever it is, but I like to always do profiles because I always learn. One of my favorite things to do is reading business profiles. I like to read profiles of successful people because I always learn from some of their strategies that worked and also their failures that they've learned from. How do you go to business? Are you out there calling on these farms, or do you just deal through feed distributors? There's companies obviously that have all kinds of additives and all this, and all your stuff's not feed additives, so it can't go through just feed companies because a bunch of your crap, you know, disinfectant doesn't go in feed. So how do you get this stuff to a farm?
Right. Yeah. So in the beginning, we weren't focused enough. So to your point, we talk about the different product lines, right? And what has really worked for us the last 4 to 5 years has been the focus on the specific one product line. So what we did in the beginning was a lot of conferences, a lot of nutrition conferences with the and when we say we should clarify is this, so the nutrition conferences within the dairy industry, which are essentially just conferences for dairy nutritionist industry professionals who are related to the dairy nutrition industry.
And there's people that are listening to this to say, what are they talking about? Like the guy that rents my farm ground milks between two facilities about 2,500 or so dairy cows. He has so much going on that he has a consultant nutritionist. I'm just explaining this to the person that doesn't fully get what we're talking about. Meaning there's a person, guy or gal, that comes to his farm a couple times a week, pulls rations, looks at them, dissects them, sends them to a lab to make sure that those dairy cows are getting the absolute right nutrition. And it's by point in lactation also. Different ration when they first have a calf than in the seventh month after they have a calf. So these nutritionists are obviously quite intelligent and they just run around and look at cow feed all the time. Well, like you said, then there's meetings where they go to learn what's going on in the industry. So the average person that's listening to this is like, I had no idea there is these things called dairy nutritionists, that it's a career and it's quite a business. And then Absolutely. They go and have conferences, right?
Absolutely. Yeah, so we spent a lot of time there with the product on display, networking as much as possible, just getting feedback. Because in the beginning, we probably were trying to go more direct to farm, and we would still do that. But we very quickly found out and learned the hard way that, you know, if these guys and gals are not involved from the get-go and they don't understand what the product is and they don't know what it is or are not aware of it, and you don't kind of have their feedback and consent on it, it's not that they're going to do what the farmer wants to do, but they'll put up a big wall, right? Naturally, because it's their job to vet what's going into the farm, and they're the eyes on the ground, right?
I think it's boots on the ground, but anyway, we're mixing metaphors. So here's the thing so the point is you learned that it's the old thing about finding who the decision maker is. And I talk all the time about in business, you got to make sure you're talking to the right person. And also you got to talk to what matters to them. I think it's cool that you didn't just sit here and start telling me about the components within these products that you sell, because who cares? What matters is, are you going to get me more production? Are you going to make my hog facility disease free so that I don't have a shutdown and I can't sell these hogs? Are you going to make it so I don't have death loss? Are you going to make it so I don't have yield loss? Really, that's the language that you talk when you're selling your stuff. It don't matter whether it's poultry, pork, dairy, soybeans, whatever, right?
Mm-hmm.
Are you the salesperson?
So in the beginning, yes. Together with my father, the first, I'd say 2 years of US. Yeah. I was just running around. I was on the conferences. I was meeting with different potential customers, setting up new customers. And these were all feed distribution businesses, right? Feed companies for the dairy industry. After around a year or so, we had a really good connection throughout the Midwest that really grabbed onto the technology, understood it, saw the value in it, introduced it to their team, and just saw a lot of success on the farm. And we ended up actually bringing one of their primary technical guys who'd been there for 24, 25 years, he kind of reached out after having some good success in that company. And we ended up coming to a good agreement on him joining our team and being able to turn around and advise the company that he worked for previously, and then tap into his many, many years of just industry connections and other nutritionists. Yep. Right. And so today he drives a lot of he's a technical guy, but at the end of the day, he's great in sales, right? Because he gets the information that the nutritionist needs into their hands in the right way. And is very, very, at the same time, grounded in farm reality. He loves to get on farm and still does that on a weekly basis. So
a challenge that you have that most people that are listening to this would not think that you have. I mean, I'm thinking, okay, there's less dairy farms because of consolidation, but that doesn't really matter because there's still 9 million cows in the United States that are producing milk every day, or 9.3 last I, whatever the number is, a little over 9 million last I looked.
Yep.
As long as that remains constant and you're selling stuff to facilities or per cow, you still have the same marketplace. So does the number of dairy farm operations decreasing because of consolidation, does that matter to you?
No, I'd say it actually makes it easier.
Yeah. There's less people to have to reach.
Yeah. And I mean, that also plays, like, having that understanding and just being in tune with it, that's reality. Like, we're very focused on the large progressive dairies. And I'm not saying the smaller ones are not, but the ones that are very, very cost conscious and aggressive and have a lot of different consultants on farm that everyone wants, you know, you have a lot more barriers to get through to get some of those going, right? And by us succeeding and having many of those customers, I don't know, that's the space that we play in. It's not that we don't, obviously our business is open to everyone, but
sure. We
let those come organically, the other ones instead, and we go after the larger, more progressive dairies who are all, yeah, I'd say, you know, 1500 cows and up, 1000 cows and up, right? So the product works great from anyone who's a 30, 40 cow dairy all the way up to a 20,000 cow dairy, right? But for at least where our time is oriented, we really focus from a sales perspective to if we can convince those guys and it works for them, it works for everyone.
You came to the United States, you personally, to set up shop about what, a year ago?
Me personally, the beginning of this year, yeah. I mean, right. We had offices here before, not in California, but in the U.S. we did, yeah.
Okay. Is the U.S. marketplace now outselling in terms of revenue Canada, where you've been since 20 years ago?
Yeah.
Okay, yes. So it didn't take long, so the move was a smart move, I guess is the point, because it didn't take long to get things to where you were superseding what happened in Canada here in the U.S.
Sure, for sure, yeah.
What do you, when we talk about problems you have that nobody else sees, all right, so it's not a matter of consolidation that actually helps you. Freight, we already talked about that. Environmental stuff. Does this impact you at all? Does it not impact you? Regulatory by state, California, where you happen to be living, has the worst regulation. Mm-hmm. Do these things impact you, or are you just agnostic about the whole thing?
Yeah. We try to kind of play in the middle on that game, right? Because I think with our connection to Europe and understanding of where that industry from an agriculture perspective has moved over the past 20 years from a regulatory standpoint, I think it's naive to think that pressure is not going to continue to happen here in North America as well too, right? So, and that's actually one of the areas that as a company we like to just transfer as much knowledge and use that knowledge to be able to work with customers, right, in the US market, and look and see, hey guys, like, you know, this is what happened in Europe. You know, this is where they went. This is where we're at now. Not to say that it gives a little bit more foresight into what could happen from a regulatory standpoint in each area of the U.S. Yeah. And I guess where we come at it with is that means we've already created certain products or solutions that help work within that regulatory environment in Europe. Mm-hmm. And, you know, from our business partners, like B2B customers who are looking to supply the right products to farms, we come to them and say, if and when the time comes, or as it approaches, you know, here's how we're feeding animals differently to adjust for these type of regulations, right? And obviously we look to be the partner in the middle that brings those products in to begin with and eventually manufacture them over here, right? So that's a big part of actually our business approach, is just tailoring to what the market is demanding. And I guess that's a big portion of that is consumer pressure, and some of it's maybe let's say not, we won't get political.
You just said something that's frankly kind of funny. You just said a big part of our business is adjusting to what the marketplace is demanding. That should be a big part of everyone's business,
of course.
Adjusting to what the market is demanding, right?
It's a good catch. Yeah.
I mean, yeah. I listen, I'm not just a podcast host that talks.
No, you're very engaging. It's good.
Well, I've got a little experience. So here's the thing about this, this marketplace. You told me that 75% of the rev is dairy, and it seems like you got a pretty good handle on that. And you talked about the employee you brought in who had so much experience and connections in that space. Mm-hmm. Well, there's got to be all kinds of opportunity to grow on the poultry and pork front. Now, poultry, you talk about consolidation, it's like six. it's like 12. World, there's like 12. All the chickens in the United States of America are essentially controlled by two dozen. I might be exaggerating, but I'm not exaggerating by a whole hell of a lot.
No, it's not. It's a fair analogy. Yeah.
So is that the next growth spot?
Yeah. So I think within, we have a product right now that it's a soy protein concentrate. It's kind of an next rendition of it. It's a patented version that essentially allows, again, when we talk about regulatory, it allows for, feeding specifically piglets, actually. Differently so that you don't have to feed pharmaceutical levels of zinc, mm-hmm. which is a big, big pressure right now throughout Europe. I know Denmark has already phased it out, and you can't use pharmaceutical levels of zinc in the diets as like a preventative anymore, which is still commonly done throughout Canada and the US and many other parts of the world, right?
But you think that you're ahead of the curve because of being compliant in Europe, which has more stringent regulatory environment on animal production. You think by being compliant there already, you're going to be well ahead of the curve here. And so you can be ramping up on the pork side with some of these additives that meet regulations that we're probably going to have that we don't have now.
Correct. I think people don't change mostly. The majority doesn't change until they're forced to. So then when they're forced to, they'll figure it out. And then you have solutions in your hands. And I guess the benefit is then being able to bring some of those solutions and help other people transition as they get forced to do it, right? So we're just staying ahead of the curve on that. Yeah.
I like it. Okay. So I asked you about poultry and you went to pork. Apparently you got your species wrong. Poultry. By the way, the pork thing is not too disparate in terms of number of people that control.
It's similar.
Yeah, it's a vertically integrated in many regards. And and then also you have integrators where they, do everything from the piglet coming out of the sow's rear end until it goes to become a pork chop. That's getting that way. It's just that many of them don't have the processors still don't control. They control it, but they don't own. And so you've got now, contractual arrangements where, yes. My neighbors over here have three hog barns. They don't own the pigs. The pigs come in when they're 14 pounds and then get taken up to 280 pounds or what have you and take them on to butcher. There's not a whole heck of a lot of people that are making the decisions on pork or poultry. No. So again, from a sales standpoint, once you get in, you're probably in. The other part is everybody and their sister is banging on that same door to try and get in. So the buyer, the producer has a good bit more leverage in that regard. Yes.
Absolutely. I mean, I'll tell you, like, compared to how when we went to market with this dairy product, which we've learned so much along the way, right, on what the right approach is, then understanding how the pork industry and how the poultry industry are different, even more so, and are incredibly vertically integrated. With this product, for example, we've sold nothing in the US. We've only invested in research with the key research institutions that influence and have clout within that industry. So we've gone to them and said, here's the product. Here's everything we've done in the past. Like, we want you to look at it. Like, we went to the group because they're already looking at some of the underlying factors that our product works within as well too. And we just doubled down on that and said, hey guys, like, we like what you're doing here. We have a product that plays into your thesis here as well too, right? Yep. We want to essentially just support your work. We want you to research on a product and take it into consideration, right? And that's what we've done over the past year. Now the results of that are starting to chum out. They look good. We have really good word from the research institution saying, hey guys, like, this looks good. We're positive on this. We like this direction, right? Now we're at the point where we can seriously consider what does the business plan look like for a facility here, because this is a product that we can bring it in over we're shipping soybeans from South America to Denmark, processing it and shipping it back to North America. It's illogical, right? So for this to actually work, we may bring product over just to start a supply to begin with, but that would be at zero negative or like, you know, nil earnings compared to when you're actually processing it here. Right. So that's an example. Like it's a way different approach where we're not going out producing them and trying to sell. We're literally taking it. It's a straight up investment, initiative to go in and make sure the research is in place and that we're confident that the industry would buy in. It's just a matter of cost and ROI for the farm. Right. So. And the more vertically integrated they are, that's what's going to push the numbers. They're going to look at a research institution that says, here's what we're doing today in diets. If you switch this out, you do this, you can expect to be able to replace these types of ingredients. And by the way, you might be able to remove pharmaceutical levels of zinc in your diets, which we forecast within the next few years when the US might come on the FDA's radar. Yeah. And they might put the hammer down, right? So.
We've already done that.
I might be getting a little technical, but you can break that down if you want.
So. Well, we know that the regulatory thing is happening. You know, we're more judicious with pharmaceuticals than we were when, and I always say this, people talk about, oh, the good old days. And I have to hear this. I don't like those big factory farms. I wish it was like back when we were kids. And I said, well, you know what it was like when I was a kid? I went out there when I was 10 years old and shot a cow full of penicillin because it was a downer. And then after 4 days of doing that, it didn't get up. So you know what? A guy came and hoisted it onto a truck and took it and sold it, and it got made for human consumption. So the good old days, 45, 50 years ago, we had worse protocols back then than we do right now. Answer me this then. You look forward. This is going to be where we close out here at the Business of Agriculture. What happens next? What's going on? Where do you go? Are you still excited? You're 28 years old. You got a lot. You've got a great deal more experience than the average 28-year-old, I would say. What are you excited about? What scares you? What are you excited about? What are you still wondering about? Where does this go?
Yeah, those are big questions, Damien.
I know. Well, you know what? Here's the first big question. I'll make it real easy on you. What does tomorrow, Merck come and buy you? Does tomorrow, one of the huge Elanco come and buy you tomorrow? Does that happen?
It could. That's always an option. We're not looking to sell.
Right.
We just continue focus. I think there's so much to be done. Again, if we go back to just why we partnered with Villefosse and DLG, the European, you know, DLG being the Danish farming cooperative and Villefosse being their daughter company that we work closely with, which is, you know, a big player in the European feed market, right? And vitamins and mineral market. And
I'm glad you clarified. I should have asked. I didn't.
Yeah,
know
no, it's was. All good. All right. And I just think that the US is going through big changes and continues to, as many other markets do, right? And it's coming here. It will come quickly. And we know when the US acts, they act quick. And I think there's a lot of solutions that are going to be needed to help solve those. And I think it's exciting to, at first, I didn't really understand the implications of being or the value of being that closely involved with the European market. But now I really do see it. Like you think it's like, I don't know that much more about what's going on there. But then you just start to see it firsthand, how relevant it is. And you watch it playing out in front of you. And I, again, whether it's an investment in this facility in the next couple of years that brings great value to, you know, the animals and to the producers, that stuff gets me excited. Like, I think if you're able to help provide solutions that put puzzle pieces together from a regular, you know, consumer, you're trying to mend that mix of the consumer pressure and demand from what they want, what they think they want from their their food production industry, right? And then give the solutions that helps the producers and integrators meet that. So
your sales are they going to be double in the United States 3 years from now? Is that an easily attained thing, or is that almost like undershooting what you think you can do?
You say 3 years from now?
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. Doubled. Yes.
Good.
Yeah.
All right. Last thought on the way out the door. You got anything for me? You sometimes listen to my podcast. You're a member of the Business of Ag Success Group, which I should tell the listeners here, if you want to up your game and network with people like Lhasa, join the Business of Ag Success Group. We meet every other week on a Friday Zoom call at 11 a.m. Eastern. It's very easy, and we have great guests that come on and talk about stuff. And then also the interaction is where the value is. So if you're interested, go ahead and send me an email, go on my website, check it out, sign up for it. It's only $99 a month. And you get cool stuff like discussions with this guy. Last thing on the way out the door. What do you got for us? Closing thought.
Yeah, I think
perspective on American agriculture, on North American agriculture from a 28-year-old ag entrepreneur.
Yeah, I think what we hung on there is that, change continues to come, right? We know that. And from a regulatory standpoint, they're going to come and they're going to seem ridiculous, but we'll just adapt as we always do. I think we have places to look to around the world where it's already been done. And hopefully we can learn from some of the mistakes or oversteps that were done in Europe as well too, which there certainly has been. And I guess that's where we hope as industry advisors and companies in between that we can help bridge some of those gaps and put research together with industry together across the water. Right. I mean, I think it's really fun to do that with, universities in the US and Europe, and you'd be surprised how many times they don't even speak together, and all it takes is setting up a meeting in some quick little thing. And that's exciting to see when that happens and kind of light bulbs go off for these research people, and then you actually get down to good solutions that were better off than what were initially done. I think the closing thoughts is there's a lot of opportunity in this industry, and everyone still needs to eat, and we can make it better in many different ways and still be successful. So
I like it. His name is Lasse Jacobsen. If you want to learn more about his company, the website is, go ahead and give it to me, Mr. Jacobsen.
Yeah, it's just protecta.com, protekta.com.
Protecta with a K instead of a C, protecta.com.
Right.
And then for the listeners, say something in Danish that's not a swear word nor sexually inappropriate. Say something in Danish on the way out the door here.
Tak for en god snak. Det var hyggeligt.
I don't know what that means. What does that mean?
Thank you for a good chat. It was hyggeligt, which is a Danish word that I think took the English language by storm a few years ago. And essentially it's like a feeling of coziness, of just comfort, of being in a good environment. So
coziness and comfort. Yeah. That's what you get right here. So if you want more great stuff, go and check it out. We've recorded like 270 of these episodes over the last 5.5 years. Go check out other episodes, share them with your friends, and also do me a favor and check out what we're doing over there at AgVisor Pro. You know what? I told you, it's an app on your phone. Go and check it out, and you might decide it's helpful to you. Till next time, his name is Lasse Jacobsen with Protecta. I'm David Mason. This is the Business of Agriculture. Hey, thanks for being here. This episode of the Business of Agriculture was brought to you by Pattern Ag. You've heard me talk about Pattern Ag because I think it's a pretty cool concept. New technology that allows you to predict the problems you're going to have and therefore treat them before those problems cost you money. What kind of problems am I talking about? Pests and disease. Things like corn rootworm, sudden death syndrome, cyst nematode, and a whole bunch of other bad things that happen out there in the field that can cost you money. Guess what? Pattern Ag will let you find out ahead of time if the disease or the pest pressure is there, and therefore you're treating it before it costs you any money. What a great concept. Go to pattern.ag, that's www.pattern.ag, to learn more about their product, their technology, how it can make you money, save you yield, and also where you can find a rep that can come out there and do the work for you. Pattern.ag.